What's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill. There's a lot going on right now. And believe it or not, with all the shit we've been dealing with, politics are not even at the forefront of what is the most important thing happening. And I'm just talking about the United States. But something happened recently, and it made me want to cover a documentary that's super political, super relevant right now. And the documentary is called Get Me Roger Stone.
People think of Washington corruption. They think of Roger Stone.
Those who say I have no soul, those who say I have no principles, are losers.
What a man. What a man. If you want to talk about who's really pulling the strings in Washington, like for real, he is the one. He is the puppet master. Roger Stone was the former campaign advisor to Trump. At times, it was informal. He's a huge mover and shaker, big political advisor in Washington, and he has been since the 70s. He's had a major, major role in American politics. Well, in 2019, he was convicted of, and this is a direct quote from the New York Times, 7 felonies for obstructing the congressional inquiry, lying to investigators under oath, and trying to block the testimony of a witness whose account would have exposed his lies. All of this was done to protect Donald Trump while Congress was investigating some illegal activities that took place leading up to the 2016 election involving ties to Russia and Ukraine and emails and all of that.
Roger Stone, one of the president's longest-serving political advisors, longtime friend of the president, has now been found guilty on 7 counts of lying to Congress and tampering with a witness. This is a spinoff of Robert Mueller's investigation.
Roger Stone went to trial. It was like a huge thing when it happened, especially because he is so influential and important. You don't actually ever think that people like this will get in trouble. But at the time, it was like, oh my gosh, look, he's going to trial. He's getting in trouble. Well, you know, this man was facing some serious time. And the other day, before he had to do a minute behind bars, a minute in prison, Donald Trump was like, you know what? He commuted his sentence, so he's walking free. He's not gonna serve any time for what he did. Now, there's articles that came out that said he could still serve time and whatever, but I think the fact that he was pardoned and that this even happened, and he was pardoned right after he did an interview talking about how he could have turned on Trump, being like, you know, I really hope he pardons me because I could have turned on him at any point in time. And all of a sudden, he is pardoned. So, you know, just it's crazy.
NBC News has now confirmed that President Trump has called Roger Stone and told him that he will commute his sentence.
Roger Stone was due to report to prison next week for lying to Congress and witness tampering for a stay of more than 3 years. But the president just commuted his sentence of his longtime confidant, so he's not going to go to prison at all.
Most recently, Roger Stone is in the news for, and by recently, I mean like very recently, he's in the news for allegedly using the word Negro on a radio show, a racial slur on a radio show.
And what appears to be Stone in a low voice is heard saying,
I don't really feel like arguing with this Negro.
I'm sorry, what was that?
And I think just what's so funny about this, you know, of course he came out, he denied it. He was like, no, you guys are crazy. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. But I think what's funny is like, for you to call someone a Negro in 2020, that means that you just do not, like, you are racist to the core. Like, you truly believe Black people are second-class citizens. Because when they said, hey guys, like, let's not call Black people Negroes anymore, it's not politically correct, you were like, I'm good on that. Actually, that's no, I'm gonna keep using that word. And so here he is on 20. And the thing is, in the documentary, at a certain point, they talk about how he was under fire for calling someone a Negro on Twitter, saying something about eating fried chicken, like something like very, very racial. So now he got the nerve to act like he stood up on, you know, live radio calling somebody a Negro when there are recordings of it. But you know, that's just where we're at right now with Mr. Stone. So in light of all of this, I wanted to revisit Get Me Roger Stone because this documentary is the only reason I knew who this man was, because to be honest, even though, you know, I'm really into politics and I really followed things, I didn't know just how his brain worked. And this documentary is very, very interesting. I would say it's probably the most like political doc that I've covered on the podcast. It is a lot of like AP government. Like I would have been fucking, this would have helped so much on my dang AP test back in 2010, 2011, whatever. Anyway, let's get into it. I've given you context about who Roger Stone is in relation to Trump and why he's relevant today, but something that the documentary does a really good job of doing is tracing Roger Stone's political life and political career all the way back to the 70s, all the way back to when he was a kid. He was born for this. You know, he's not new to this. He's true to this. This man, die hard born Republican. He tells this story about how when he was a kid, he skewed the election in his class by telling everyone they did a mock election of Kennedy versus Nixon, I think, and he really liked the way Kennedy looked on TV, da 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 da. So he basically told everybody that Nixon, he made up some lie to the effect of like, Nixon's gonna make us like go to school on Saturdays. It may not have been that, but he says something like that to all the kids. And even though this was a super conservative town that he was in, to the surprise of all the adults, JFK won the mock election in the elementary school. And he said that was the first moment that he realized the power of misinformation in the election. He was a child. He was a child realizing this, which is crazy. But it was a really interesting tidbit, because I think one thing I'm gonna touch on a lot later in the episode as well is I think that this documentary does a really, really good job of providing all of these little anecdotes that really paint a picture of this man. They do what is probably the most important tenet of video storytelling, which is they show, not tell. It's really, really important that you are giving your audience information and you're not lecturing them in a documentary, to me, to be successful. That is why I believe not every documentary needs a narrator all the time, because if you're doing a really good job and you did really, really good interviews, people will be filling in those gaps for you. And that's what they do here. Roger Stone has all of these great stories from when he was younger that literally bring us from his childhood all the way up until 2017, which is when the documentary came out.
By the time he was 12, Stone switched from staunch Democrat to hardcore conservative when a neighbor gave him Barry Goldwater's book, The Conscience of a Conservative. From there on out, Stone was an ardent supporter of conservatives in many forms.
When he was younger and he was in college, you know, super political, like blah, 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 he's probably like the young Republican on campus. He worked for the Richard Nixon campaign in college. And this man loves Richard Nixon. Roger Stone loves Richard Nixon, which, first of all, ding, 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 red fucking flag. Richard Nixon was so racist, mind you. We talked about this a little bit in 13th, but Richard Nixon started the war on drugs, which was detrimental to the black community.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse.
Richard Nixon famously had what was called the Southern Strategy, which was a method of using basically coded language to appeal to poor whites, poor and working class whites during the elections, using words like law and order and things like that, basically to get them to side with these upper class people who don't really have their best interests at heart, but it's to appeal to these Southern voters to get them to say, you know what, I will vote for this party who technically, economically does not have my best interest in mind, but I'm aside with them anyway, basically because of racism.
You start out in 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger, that hurts your backfire, so you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights and all that stuff. That if it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other.
Roger Stone loved him some Richard Nixon, okay? He even had a tattoo on his back of Richard Nixon's face. He has all of this Richard Nixon memorabilia collected. And for those of you who do not know, Richard Nixon ended up resigning following the Watergate scandal, where he was accused of having people go into the Watergate hotel and tamper with and look through the papers of people in the Democratic Party doing some fucked up shit. Richard Nixon was also notorious for he recorded like damn near every conversation he ever had, which is why we even know what the Southern Strategy is, which is why we know it's racist, because there's so many recordings of him and his people talking about it and just being racist. So this was Roger Stone's man. Like that was his man. And he talks about how at a very young age, he became a master of disinformation.
His notorious political rap sheet goes back to the Nixon campaign when the then 19-year-old donated money to Nixon's opponent. He said it was from the Young Socialist Alliance and gave the receipt to the press.
And guess who did not win the nomination? That guy. And it's that kind of like foul, like, wow, that's very clever. It is clever. That is fucked up, but that is very, very clever. It's that kind of thing that he learned at a very, very young age. He was also the youngest person to go before the grand jury for Watergate. When that went to trial, his name was up there and he was like, I thought it was so cool. And I was like, okay, this man is an evil genius. And I say that not to say that what he was doing is right. But one thing that you notice throughout the documentary, and I think is very prevalent today, is that the Republican Party, and I'm not a Republican, I'm not praising the Republican Party. However, the Republican Party has no qualms about doing some fucked up stuff to win. And Roger Stone is a major, major reason why that is the case. Roger Stone also had something called Stone's Rules, which were a series of rules. I don't know how many rules. There were like a ton of rules that they sprinkled throughout the documentary, which was a really, really good way of splitting things up. Normally I would say, you know, it's a cop-out because maybe they didn't tie the story together well, but it was not. They picked some standout Stone's rules and they had the text there, and then they would kind of, he would explain what it was. There were so many interviews with him where he literally just explains what he does and he explains his strategy, which is super interesting because it gives you insight into the minds of these people who are running these campaigns. I think it's very, very easy to assume, oh my God, nobody would ever do that. That's so crazy. And it's like, yes, actually, yes, they fucking would. So Stone's rules, he had a bunch of different rules that he lives by, and this is what he uses to plan out people's candidacies and people's campaigns and things like that. Two rules that stood out to me that we see very, very prevalent today in Donald Trump's campaigns, both now and in 2016. Attack, 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 never defend, and hate is a stronger motivator than love. That's wild. Those are wild to me because they are literally like the tenets of the Republican Party. The Republicans know how to run a damn campaign built on fear-mongering. Let me tell you, they've been doing that for years. Whether it's Richard Nixon talking about law and order, whether or not it's Ronald Reagan talking about crack and how we need to lock up all these crack addicts, whether or not it's George Bush Sr. who ran an ad that Roger Stone was allegedly, you know, probably involved in. This was a very, very famous political attack ad because it was against, I believe his opponent at the time was Dukakis. And basically this ad used the idea that Bush's opponent at the time had voted for, you know, prisoners to be able to get weekends off to come out of prison. And one prisoner who had been allowed the weekend off had killed this white woman over that weekend that he was out of prison. And so in the attack ad, they show this picture of this black man, this grizzled looking black man. This is in black and white. The photo of him is in black and white. He looks crazy as hell. And they show this and they're like, so if you vote for that guy, he's gonna let these crazy, you know, he's gonna let all these prisoners out. Is that what you want?
Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man, and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
That kind of fear-mongering, that unabashed fear-mongering, literally in an ad. But it's clearly just using the imagery of this black brute, this violent black man who, oh my God, is gonna go attack white women. Ah! I'm not saying that this man should have, you know, attacked and killed those people. I'm not saying that at all. In this case, the Republican Party was able to take a case that's technically totally unrelated to the election and blow it up in this attack ad to prey on people's fears, to prey on racism, to make this ad, to make people think, okay, that's scary. I don't want that to happen to me. I'm not gonna vote for this guy, even though it doesn't have a damn thing to do with the actual election. You see what I'm saying? We're not saying what Bush can do for you. We're just saying, look at this scary thing. Don't vote for that guy because he's loosely associated with this scary thing. And that is a tenet that, you know, was born out of Roger Stone's type of political philosophy. There was this quote that he has that says, to me, it all comes down to winning. It comes down to using any and every legal means available to achieve victory for my friends and allies and to inflict crushing defeat on my opponents and, yes, enemies. Which is a super villain-ass quote if I have ever heard one. Roger Stone was also super involved in the rise of PACs in US politics. So PACs are political action committees. These are basically just organizations that raise money and spend money on political candidates. Because there are legal limits on how much an individual can give to candidates, with PACs, I'm pretty sure the limit is higher, so this organization can like give a bunch of money to whoever is running for president, let's say, or governor, whatever. You know, PACs usually have some kind of very clear political agenda behind them. What Roger Stone did was he helped in the rise of PACs, pioneered all these negative political ad campaigns, and a lot of these PACs served the interests of dictators overseas who were committing all sorts of human rights violations. And he had access to all of these candidates, all of these politicians, and so he was basically going to these dictators, working with them, and being like, hey, what do you want the US to do? And then going back to all these politicians and being like, hey, why don't you do this? Because we're gonna, you know, money, money, money. So Roger Stone has been into doing all of this. A lot of this stuff happened in the 80s, 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And he first suggested that Trump run for president in the 80s.
I was not very pleased by the prospective candidacy of George H.W. Bush. It was then that I first suggested to Donald Trump that he should think about running for president. I remember his initial response. You must be out of your mind.
Trump did do interviews back then where people are like, are you going to run for president? And he, you know, it's very disturbing to listen to now, but he does address it.
I know people have talked to you about whether or not you want to run. Would you ever?
You know, I just probably wouldn't do it, Oprah. I probably wouldn't, but I do get tired of seeing what's happening with this country. And if it got so bad, I would never want to rule it out totally.
You've said, though, that if you did run for president, you believe you'd win.
Well, I don't know. I think I'd win. I tell you what, I wouldn't go in to lose.
He wanted Donald Trump to run. I guess Donald was like, no, I don't really want to now. Isn't the time, Roger, please. And Roger was like, all right. But Roger said he understood at the time the power of Donald Trump. I think we all know what my political views are. We're how many episodes into this damn podcast, and it's always me like ranting into this microphone. But we cannot deny that as a society, before the election, everybody was all up on Donald Trump, talking about some, there's just so many lyrics about him.
Take over the world when I'm on my Donald Trump shit. Look at all this money. Ain't that some shit?
Time to flip the work, make the block bump. Boys in the hood call me Black Donald Trump.
Up like Donald Trump, up, say something like them Trumps.
You know, he was like a big cultural meme. I was like, oh, Donald Trump.
It is my esteemed pleasure to introduce Mr. and Mrs. Donald Trump.
Mr. Donald! Oh my God!
I mean, I know I personally did not know enough about this man at all. He was just, it was what it was. So at the time, Roger Stone understood the power of Trump, the power of this rich white man who had this story, and he's a millionaire, da 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 da, you know? But then in the 90s, it came out that Roger Stone had been going to sex clubs with his wife, and so he started, you know, staying in the shadows, which, listen, get it how you live, Roger, but also don't be skewing freaking elections all the damn time. And then in the 2000s, I don't know what it was about him, but in the new millennium, he was like, all right, I'm gonna really get into it. He had a huge role in the recount of the 2000 election. So in 2000, George Bush was running against Al Gore. Al Gore won the popular vote, but because we have the dumbass Electoral College, which has foiled us time and time again in the presidential election, you know, there had to be a recount in Florida because it was super, super close. Mind you, who was the governor of Florida at the time? Jeb Bush, who looks like a freaking sim.
Jeb Bush, who is the governor of the state of Florida, we're told that just a few moments ago that Jeb Bush told his dad, former President Bush, that we won't know about Florida until at least midnight, between midnight and 1 a.m.
There was a recount that had to be done in Florida, and so Roger Stone claims he was the reason that George Bush won, because at a certain point when they're doing the recount of the 2000 election, he sent protesters out there so it looked like people were real, real upset. And then he had a bunch of people storm the hall where they were doing the recount to intimidate the people who were counting the ballots so they could not keep counting the ballots. And then started having people run in and scream and make a lot of noise, and then it just like fucked with it. He also killed off the Progressive Party in the early 2000s to make it easier for Republicans so that it would not split the vote, essentially. And there would not be a third party option so that the Democrats could possibly win. He used Al Sharpton, had him run for president and backed him to try to steal votes and kind of skew the vote in that way. Basically, the thinking is if you have two candidates and you're worried your candidate may not necessarily get as many votes as you think, it can be to your advantage sometimes, and it sometimes isn't, to have a third person in the running to kind of siphon off votes from the other person. It depends on who that person is. Sometimes that can help you. Sometimes that can help you, sometimes that can hurt you. So Roger Stone understood this, and he used this to the advantage of the Republican Party, oftentimes, to skew the vote in his favor. One of the main takeaways from this political strategy that we've seen time and time again is manipulating angry white working class voters to serve the purpose of the upper class Republican Party. I'm not saying that people should not be upset about lost jobs and things like that, but as Nixon showed us, and as what happens a lot of times, is that it's easy for people like Roger Stone to come in and say to people, you know, this is why your life is like this. This is why you need to be upset. This is why you need to be mad. They're misdirecting their anger at, you know, whether it's Black people, whether it's Mexican people, whether or not it's immigrants as a whole, whether it's Muslim people, you know, they're having these people misdirect their anger to kind of take away from the, oh, haha, we're taking your money, because look at how that's working now. People are dying from a disease that the government is not taking care of us for. They're reopening stores, but they're still telling people, you know, still be mad at this, that, and the third, and kind of misdirecting their anger and misdirecting their attention from what is truly the issue at hand. Going into Trump and how Roger Stone relates to present day politics, one thing that he did was a lot of threats in the freaking 2016 campaign. He threatened to disclose the hotel rooms of the delegates who did not vote for Trump at the Republican National Convention.
Stone is calling it a Stop the Steal rally, because he claims Cruz and others in the GOP are plotting to take the nomination away from Trump at the convention.
These delegates didn't elect themselves. We elected them. We need a show of force to demonstrate to the politicians that the voters' votes in the primaries cannot be just disallowed.
Roger Stone will do literally anything. He will do anything to get these votes. At the very, very end of the documentary, he says something like, "I revel in your hatred because if I weren't effective, you wouldn't hate me." And I remember when I watched that for the first time, I was like, damn, he's right. Damn it. You know what I mean? It's really honestly wild to watch because you don't think that people actually do these kinds of things. And then you hear him say brazenly, like, yeah, I did that shit. And it's like, oh, okay. So that's what's going on. In relation to Trump, you know, as I said, Roger Stone has been in Trump's corner from the jump, which is crazy. Roger Stone was a lot of the reason that certain rhetoric was used, whether it was lock her up with Hillary Clinton. He put Alex Jones on a pedestal, praised, you know, a lot of alt-right and like online outlets and things like that. These are all things that eventually together, coming together as a whole, helped Trump win over voters, helped Trump constantly be in the news. That's another thing. Roger Stone seemed to really, really understand what people liked in terms of entertainment. He said at the beginning of the documentary he wanted to be an actor. I see the fuck why. Because he knows how to entertain people. And the Trump campaign was entertainment for people. I will say I was guilty of, in 2016 specifically, I mean, I don't think anybody thought that the election was going to go how it went, but I was definitely guilty of retweeting things and feeding into the narrative. Even though I was on the other side, I was definitely feeding into the drama, being like, oh, this is so dumb. Oh my God, I can't believe this. Donald Trump was in the news literally every single day in 2016, and I'm sure Roger Stone loved every single minute of it.
I have no title, I have no line responsibilities, but I have access to all the right people. I'm just an FOT, friend of Trump.
I think a lot of times there is talk of how the Trump campaign was influenced by memes, and like I did an episode on the Great Hack and how Facebook played a role, but this is like the real nitty-gritty politics side of it, and this is who's behind the curtain. This is who's really, 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 really pulling the strings. Trump said that he fired Roger Stone. Roger Stone said that he quit, but he did say that he was still, you know, helping him a little bit. Paul Manafort, who was an early business partner of Roger Stone and who also got into some trouble over the last few years.
Jury found former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort guilty on 8 of 18 criminal counts. The convictions related to fraud and financial crimes, activity that took place before Manafort's stint on the campaign.
And because Manafort and Stone were so close, it was basically like Roger Stone still had access to the president, so he still had a lot of influence over the strategy of the campaign and the things and the outcomes and everything that was happening. There's a point in the documentary where they replay everything leading up to election night. And when I tell you this is not even an emotional documentary, maybe I just been going through it, but I cried. I a single tear rolled down my cheek because I was like, this man really did that shit. He really did it. He really did it. I will say, I think that this documentary is really, really good because it's so interesting to learn about this man's political strategy, especially because it was after the fact, and looking back, it's easy to look back and be like, oh, clearly that's what they were doing. But I think it also opens up the floor to the larger conversation of all of the different ways that the Republican Party manipulates information, manipulates people, and how clearly people like Roger Stone are running this party and they do not care. They don't care, and they're not afraid to do the things that you think they wouldn't be doing. And they know what they're doing. Roger Stone knows what he's doing, and he knows that we know what he's doing, and he's still doing it anyway. A lot of the people who were interviewed in this, they talked about how decency is pretty much gone in American politics. I think as a black person in this country, decency was never here to begin with because, you know, slavery. But the documentary really just goes into what the strategy really is and how I think a lot of us just take things at face value. We don't necessarily think there could truly be something going on underneath. My biggest takeaway from this documentary was that all of America's wrongs in terms of politics, they run so deep. They run so deep, and they still go on to this day. Part of the reason I say that is because one of Roger Stone's you know, his two biggest idols were freaking Richard Nixon and then this attorney, Roy Cohn, who was super, super close to McCarthy, who pioneered freaking McCarthyism and the House of Un-American Activities Committee in the 50s, whose job was basically to take people who they suspected were communists, bring them before this committee in the House, and just rip them apart, rip them to shreds, and then blacklist them. And it's that kind of bullying and that kind of aggression in US politics, which was often misdirected and completely misguided. It's people who look up to people like that who bring this kind of energy, and it trickles down to 2020. It sounds a little depressing, but it definitely makes me, you know, a lot more pessimistic about the state of US politics, because I think when we're kids and we learn about US history, it's really, really easy to assume. And even today, it's easy to assume, oh, things have gotten worse, blah, 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 because things seem to be a little bit more overt. But if you really, really look back at the history, things were always overt. Things were always overt. Things were always going down. Things were always happening. Now, one, we have a global pandemic. But two, I think people are just kind of waking up to the thing of, okay, this has been going on for years and years and years. Like, what's next? In terms of the documentary, it was great. It was great. I have a lot of thoughts on the politics in general, but the documentary had such a clear storyline. It was straight to the point. You know what you're getting. They show, they don't tell. It was just so good. The fact that they got so many interviews with Roger Stone, and then he spoke so openly, seemingly openly, and they got to talk to all of these political analysts and just so many people, just really, really helped paint a clearer picture, not just of Roger Stone, but of all of the context of everything that was going on around him too. Because I think in order to understand this man, you also have to understand the factors at play, the external influences that he had that made him into who he is now. The only little note that I had, not that they're taking my notes on a three-year-old documentary, but there was one weird close-up camera angle for someone's interview that I was like, why is this camera so damn close to this man? Like, what is this? Every time I realized it was going on, I was like, who is this and why can I see into his eyeballs? But that was pretty much the only thing. I think that for what it was like a perfect amount of time, great quality. Honestly, I'm giving it 5 stars. I know the subject matter is not necessarily, listen, if you want a documentary that's like, this is so interesting and I learned, this may not be the documentary for you. If you don't like history and you don't like politics, this is absolutely not the doc for you. But structurally, this is a good ass documentary. You have the subject who's interviewed in it. You have some great interview shots. You have all this historical context that brings it to now. I keep mentioning how they show and don't tell. And this documentary is an example of something that, to me, I watch this and I think, oh my God, this man is so crazy. I can't believe these things would happen in politics. It's just so messed up. I could see someone else on the other side watching this and being like, yeah, that's right. You show them. I think it's really important and it's very admirable if you're able to truly present something in what seems to be a totally unbiased manner. They're telling this man's story not in a way that praises him at all, but in a way that allows you to just see him for who he is. He's showing you this, he is giving you this information, and you are able to gather what you want from it. And it does a really good job, for me anyway, of putting the last 3 years into context. Of course, I watched this before all this shit went down, so it's even more depressing to watch it now, let me tell you. But it does a really, really good job of letting you decipher how you feel about Roger Stone and how you feel about everything going on based on this documentary. So, 5 stars. Definitely check it out if you want to, you know, be pissed off and depressed afterwards. But you know what? That's what a good documentary does. It makes you feel something. You know, it makes you feel. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode.